Welcome to the Predictable Revenue Podcast, where sales leaders teach you what's working for them and how you can build it yourself.
This episode of the Predictable Revenue Podcast is brought to you by our sales coaching and consulting services. Are you looking to create repeatable, scalable, and predictable revenue? We've helped thousands of companies grow their business with tailored expert advice backed by testing to ensure they establish the best practices that'll work for them. Head over to bit.ly/predictable revenue coaching to learn more.
Hi, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of the Predictable Revenue Podcast. Today, we're going to be talking about something every CEO should be paying attention to. So if you're not consciously removing friction from the buying process, your buyer's going to buy from someone else. It's as simple as that. I'm your host, Sarah Hicks, and today on the Predictable Revenue Podcast, I'm going to be chatting with an expert about how CEOs can scale revenue holistically. She's a former number one mid-market B2B sales rep who, after selling millions and breaking multiple records, formed House of Revenue, a Denver-based firm of fractional revenue leaders who currently lead the marketing, sales, customer success, and rev ops departments for 15 companies nationwide. In the past year, they've helped multiple second-stage growth companies between 2 million and 20 million, on average, double their MRR within 10 months, resulting in an average ROI of 1,454% and an average annual revenue growth eclipsing 3.2 million. Mary Grothy, welcome to the Predictable Revenue Podcast.
Hey, thank you so much.
So we're talking about CEOs here. We're gearing this towards CEOs, and we're talking about CEOs kind of in what stage of their growth. Give me a bit of context on where we're starting off here.
So typically, CEOs will enter into two significant stages on their journey. There's startup scale, and then there's their scaling up journey, which typically happens once they hit the second stage of growth. So startup scale is all hands on deck. You may or may not have product market fit. You're more so in a product message fit stage, and you have not as much attention on profitably scaling as you do on just getting customers onto your service. From there, once you hit that initial 1 to 2 million in revenue, that's where I think our conversation is starting today, that you've gone through the startup scale, not to say that you don't have some startup tendencies still, but you've gone through that initial all hands on deck, whatever it takes to get customers on board. Once you get to 1 to 2 million, sometimes 3 million in revenue, you'll start to notice that what got you to that point isn't necessarily what's going to get you to the next level. You'll notice good data points that you'll have that you can go back, analyze from your existing customers. You can look at buy cycles. You can look at retention. You can look at what they're purchasing, how long they've been on the service. You can do surveys. So you're much more educated on who that ideal customer is, but you may notice that the infrastructure or lack thereof, systems or processes that you built or you didn't in the startup scale may not be what you need to get through that next stage. So that's the CEO that we're going to be talking about today.
Amazing. And we're going to walk them through how to get through that next little, the second phase of growth, how to scale there in a sustainable way. So let's dive right into that. So walk me from kind of the beginning of this second stage of growth here. How can CEOs set everything up from the beginning to scale?
Mm-hmm. So initially, I'm a founder and a scaling CEO. So I want to say that because I come from a place of pure empathy and experience. We've gone from zero to, we'll close out this year at about 3.6 million in 4 years, but we're at a run rate of closer to about 4.5 million. And so there's just for perspective is why I'm sharing that, so people can hear some stories from our journey and then also from others, other companies that we have worked with. So how do we start in that process? Well, when you start a company and you're founding, you're doing it off of an assumption or a hypothesis. You've identified a problem in the market and you've come up with a solution to that problem. Startup scale, that initial 0 to 1 or 2 million is all about testing that hypothesis and seeing what kind of company you can build based on the problem you want to solve. So through that journey, you're fine-tuning the product or service and you're growing the company. As I just mentioned, you'll have a lot of data points that you can go back and review. One thing that we recommend first before entering into that second stage of scale is getting recentered on who is your customer. oftentimes what we'll find is that if a CEO continues down the same path without iterating and realigning with the type of buyer that they want more of, they'll continue to get more of maybe what they don't want. So let me make that a little bit more specific. Let's say there's a tech product and you're able to sell this to SMB as well as mid-market, and then you have a couple of larger companies. Well, the CEO may say, as we continue to grow, I'm going to have a small market team, a mid-market team, and enterprise, because we have customers across all three of those segments. So I want to grow them all. Okay. But what if a new competitor in the market was built specifically for enterprise that solves your exact same problem, and they just raised $17 million? And they're going to leapfrog in the market. And so it's a complete uphill battle. And if you had done a competitive analysis and looked at where you are, and then also maybe you ran an internal report and looked at the numbers, maybe you are completely upside down and not profitable on those enterprise accounts. Maybe you didn't take into consideration that the skill set and knowledge of your customer success team or implementation team to work on those enterprise accounts is actually a hefty requirement that you are not fulfilling today. So in order to scale in the enterprise, the cash outlay is actually significant. And so it's not equal parts. Let's equally grow in SMB, mid-market, and enterprise. And so what we want to look at, number one, is the go-to-market strategy. And we want to understand how the brand is performing and how the brand is perceived by the market. So step one is to understand who's the customer. We love doing voice of the customer surveys. This is a great exercise anybody can implement. And you should get a good sampling of all the different types of companies that you serve. So you can see the variance from small to large or across different industries, or potentially if it's across different geographies, but interview these customers. Also look at the internal data, talk to the success team, talk to the support team, and really identify who is the ideal customer. Meaning if you just had to pick one, okay, maybe two, that you could build your whole client base off of, who would it be? And a lot of CEOs and founders need to go from this wide vision into a very focused vision. The get niche, get rich saying is very true. And if they can say, even though we serve about 10 different types of companies, we find that these two are the most profitable. They seem to be the ones who understand us the most. We have a shorter sales cycle on them and a higher average revenue per sale. Well, that sounds like a brilliant recipe for scaling. So voice of the customer, one. Two, review the data and fine tune and trim down the list. You should have one, maybe two ICPs out of the gate. Some of our clients, we have landed on three or four or five ICPs, which is fine. It just adds a lot of complexity to building out the revenue engine. So if you can start with one or two, you're in a great spot. And I would narrow it down based on that. The third step is a competitive analysis. Who else is playing in this space? What is the experience they're creating for the buyer on social media, organic media, paid media, podcast, webinar, broadcasting strategies, outbound sales team, advertising? What ways are they communicating with and attracting the buyers? And then we recommend secret shopping as a part of that process. Secret shop, figure out what the process is, how many steps are in, how many handoffs, what kind of questions they're asking, where the demo step is, what kind of proposal, pricing, the whole kit and caboodle. Based on that data, you should be able to fine tune. So we did customer interviews, then we narrowed down our specific profile. Then we truly understand who we're competing against. From there, you should have your brand and go-to-market strategy.
Mm-hmm. Tell me some of the questions that you want to ask in the voice of the customer interviews to help you narrow down into that, yeah, more specific ideal customer.
We like to ask questions both that are subjective and objective. And we want to make sure that we're understanding experience questions as well as data-driven questions. I love starting by asking, how did you find out about this company? And I also want to understand, what was the problem or challenge that you were facing that prompted you to engage with this company as part of your buying decision? We try to get as granular as possible with what their process was like, other competitors that they evaluated, but we really want to understand from a psychological standpoint, how this buyer went from their old way of doing things to identifying that they had a problem, that they were ready, willing, and able to invest in solving it, who they met with, who they vet, what the process was, and then why they made the decision to work with that company. So that's number one that we want to uncover. Number two, we want to ask about their experience through implementation. What was it like working with sales, which is that front part, and then explain the experience with the handoff and onboarding as a customer. What worked really well? Where is there room for opportunity? Would the company do right? Where is there room for improvement? From there, we want to talk about ongoing relationship, meaning how frequently they're using, if they could rate their level of adoption. But we want to get into some numbers. We want to hear claims and ROI statements of anything that they can do to show us, hey, we increased efficiency by 57%, or we reduced fill in the blank by X percent, or we were able to save this amount of cost or dollars, or even if they can explain more in a scenario by using the software, we were able to reduce headcount, whatever it might be, or we entered a new market or a fill in the blank. But we're looking for those proof statements. One of my favorite questions or a series of questions to dig into is why they remain a customer. Because the competition is always knocking at the door. And if from an account management or customer success standpoint, if you're not intentionally and proactively working to retain your customer, your competition is. Your competition is knocking down their door and planting seeds and building a relationship to move them away from you. And if you're not engaged in a relationship with your customers, eventually that competitor is going to earn the relationship. And so I want to understand if the client or the company is doing a tremendous job retaining them, or if there's area for improvement. And then last but not least, just overall, if you could change anything about the product or service, the company, the people, what would it be and why? And just getting that really specific feedback is important.
That makes sense. And so when we're talking about, again, the scaling and scaling holistically, one of those things that's got to happen is building out that revenue arm, building out the headcount, like maybe early days up to 1 million. Often it's just founder-led sales up to that point, maybe even a little bit further, or there's maybe some full cycle people that are wearing a couple of different hats. So what is your recommendation there on kind of when you're hitting the second stage of scaling and you've got to build out that team? How do you do that?
So we believe that marketing and sales shouldn't be separated. There should be a single funnel. Automation is everybody's friend. You can personalize automation depending on the complexity of the sale and also the market that the company is selling into. Then there's a level of personalization that's going to be required, and that will be on a varying scale. Something that's a little bit more transactional, you can get away with a little bit more lack of personalization and more automation because it's highly transactional, quick purchases. But when we're talking about the other end of the spectrum, an enterprise sale, they buy it every 5 to 7 years, it's $1 million price tag. There's going to be substantial personalization in that and more account-based, marketing account-based sales. And so I'm going to speak more in general terms, just knowing that things would need to be fine-tuned based on what you're selling into which market. So how do you build that holistically? Well, automation is your friend, and marketing and sales should work together. You need to have both inbound and outbound working at the exact same time. We are fans of both models of bringing in SDRs, BDRs, but also having full cycle sales. We are seeing the resurgence of full cycle salespeople. We are noticing that buyers are getting very frustrated with friction-full buying processes. And we're noticing that one of the pieces that creates that is this awkward handoff between person doing the outbound and then having to align calendars and do the handoff and even getting a solutions engineer or that technical counterpart engaged. So how do we build the revenue team to set it for scale? One, you need to identify all the inbound tactics and get them running so that you have plentiful lead flow. There's two types of ways to get a lead. You either have the person that's already looking for it, and so they're on the internet searching for a solution to their problem. There are so many marketing tactics that can intercept with that buyer when they're in their awareness or consideration stage. There's also the element of outbound, where a buyer may be somewhat aware they have a problem, but they haven't taken the steps yet to search for the solution. And that's where outbound comes in, whether it's outbound marketing or outbound sales. And you're able to identify potentially out of that list of 50 to 100 people, maybe one's going to say, I'm glad you called. I actually have this challenge. I just haven't gotten to it yet. Or I'm actually in the middle of searching for a solution to this, but I've never heard of your company. What do you do? And so we want to make sure we're equal parts on that and aligned in the effort. So without getting into the weeds here, which I can do from time to time, so pull me back up if I need to, we want to have a holistic effort between marketing and sales. Every campaign should be worked in tandem. We should have, as part of sales automation, should be segmented. We talked about those ICPs. Let's say you have four different ones. Well, within each ICP, you have different types of buyers. So maybe you have a financial buyer, you have more of a people buyer, you have a technical buyer, you have the person that's actually using, so a functionary, they're using the product or service. They need to be spoken to differently. They have different language. They care about different things. So of that ICP, if you have four different buyers, you should have four sets of sequences and language and communication and different types of case studies, variations. The finance buyer is going to care more than the end user buyer and the technical and then the people buyer. And so you have to make sure that your marketing is going to work for your sales campaigns and you have variations. Also, sales doing outbound. If they're doing outbound to a specific type of buyer, rather than sending them in a URL in the email signature to your main.com, customize that link specific to that buyer and have your marketing team create for that specific type of buyer of that ICP a page on the website so that when they click it, you have a higher rate of conversion because they go to a page that was built specifically for them that accurately describes their day in the life, and they should view that page and say, this company gets me. And that's what you opened with. How do you remove the friction from the process? Well, one, you remove friction right away if you're speaking their language and you did the translating for them and you're directing them to content, even just website copy. But then it can go into your lead magnets and downloads and checklists and white papers and ebooks and case studies, whatever it is, to give them that material. Those collateral, those pieces, those documents that marketing is going to create should also be linked in sales cadence and communication and also used. So marketing and sales need to work harmoniously together throughout. And that's just a few examples of the next step of building a revenue engine.
Nice. And one of the pieces that you mentioned that you're starting to collect as a CEO as you enter into this stage are data points. You've got more data at your disposal now, maybe a few more tools in the tech stack that are producing that data. What's the step for starting to like aggregate, analyze, and actually put to use the data that you're collecting from all these different places?
Yes. And I realize I didn't answer your other question about headcount. When you go from CEO, founder sales into growing your revenue engine, always hire salespeople in twos because they compete with each other. They need camaraderie. They're loud. I'm a salesperson, so I can say this, like, we're loud. We need friends. We need competition. We need a buddy. So hire in two. It'll absolutely be a great return. Also, if for some reason one of them doesn't work out, you're not starting from square one. So hire in two, hire one great marketer, and then partner with a great agency that can help supplement components, whether it's blog writing or podcast production or paid media or other social media, you know, other pieces that your marketer isn't proficient in. So get a marketing powerhouse, align with an agency that can supplement some of the tactics they're not proficient in, and then hire two salespeople would be the recommendation out of the gate. Now, if you just secured some significant funding, maybe you hire two marketers, bring one of those specialties in-house, and then you could potentially have four salespeople. But even if you raise millions of dollars, you have to test it before you scale it. You should build, test, optimize, and then scale it. So a huge mistake would be you raise a bunch of money, so you go hire 12 salespeople or 20 salespeople, but you don't have your playbook done yet. You haven't tested your campaigns. You haven't tested the sequences and the process. And so it's not scalable. And then it's just a mess and you have frustrated salespeople and it's not good. And then you're burning through that raise super fast. So start small, prove it out, and then optimize it. Okay. I just had to clarify that question. So pardon me. Now you're going to have to ask the other one because I already got it.
No, that's okay. Yeah. Thank you. Thank you for the context. So the next question was
data.
Around the data. Yeah. Aggregating, analyzing, putting to use.
Okay. So CEOs, you need to focus on leading indicators and lagging indicators. you should never be surprised with a lagging if you miss or even hit and achieve. Your leading indicators are your saving grace. You need to figure out what you need to view ahead of time that predicts what happens in the future. So simply put, here's a really easy leading and lagging: pipeline versus closed revenue. So you take your close rate, divide that by what you need to close, and you have the pipeline amount. But then if you're building the full reverse funnel, you have to look at what stage do you create pipeline? Is it at discovery? Is it once it's been qualified? Is it at the demo step? Is it at proposal stage? When are you forecasting revenue that you're calculating the close rate from? Because you may need a secondary calculation behind that to say, if we're going to have this much in qualified proposal revenue, how much discovery revenue do we need? Then you can look at the metrics even further to say, if we need this much in discovery on, let's say, a weekly basis, how many meetings is that? So you're going to divide it by your average revenue per sale and then identify how many meetings, take into consideration how many meetings fall off the calendar after they're booked. And so you'll want to put that in for error. And then you're going to be able to say, okay, then if this is what we needed, here's how many salespeople we need if we're trying to achieve this metric. And I would say be very fair on your salespeople. We have seen a lot of ridiculous quotas being assigned that are pulled from thin air. They're not attainable. They're not based on science. They're just based on, well, we have to mm-hmm. achieve this if we're going to do this raise. Well, it's like, well, then you're asking for magicians, like, and then people don't like their job, and that's not a nice thing to do. So being realistic. So that's a very simple viewpoint, but in any great CRM, like a HubSpot, which we're partners of, we're a huge fan of, there's other technologies out there, of course, being Salesforce, and there's dozens of other CRMs. Every one of them should have reporting. You should have a dashboard. You should look at the metrics that matter. So if you can look at top of funnel metrics through marketing, it could be website sessions, it could be looking at conversions, whether that's coming through from a score of a lead magnet, a score from an MQL standpoint. So they've interacted with lead magnets and downloads, and they've been on X amount of web pages, but they never converted as far as filling out a contact us form or a chatbot. They could get a score, you can have contact, but you should look at those top of funnel metrics so that you know at the very, very, very top level before it goes into a sales opportunity that you have the traffic and the activity that you need at the top in order to convert. So those are important. It can get even more granular than that, looking at open rates, bounce rates, reply rates, click-through rates, engagement rates, campaigns, always keeping your eye on revenue attribution, which is just a fancy word for where's your leads or your activity coming from. And so you should be marking each campaign and saying, okay, when we ran this campaign, it converted in 7%. We got X amount in pipeline. Okay, but this campaign converted at 28%. Which one are we going to optimize? So as far as the CEO, data is your best friend. One of the ways that you can efficiently scale between that 2 and 20 million is by knowing your numbers. A lot of CEOs will come to us after they've tried multiple things to scale, and they will just have a blanket statement. We've spent thousands of dollars on marketing agencies, and then we spent thousands of dollars on an outsourced lead gen company, and we never saw anything for it. I'm like, you're not paying attention to the dollar or the numbers, and you're not hyper-vigilant as far as where the investment is going and those granular pieces. So Sarah, to your mm-hmm. point, the data is required. The CEOs, if it's not natural, like, you need to learn to love the data.
Yeah, and look for it everywhere at every turn, kind of throughout the whole buyer's journey and selling process, everything. Yeah, makes sense. And then finally, the part of your holistic view on scaling is the flywheel approach. So talk me through that part of it.
Yeah, so the sale doesn't stop when they sign a contract, and revenue doesn't stop when you sign a contract. You heard, and when I was talking about the voice of the customer questions, how many of those questions were based on retention and adoption and expansion and advocacy? The customer success and account management team, however that is divided up, needs to be focused on the client experience and ensuring that those customers are being retained. Also, we're maximizing revenue opportunities. And the reason that HubSpot specifically uses that flywheel versus a funnel is to show that it's a continuous cycle, that it never just pops through the funnel and it's like, cool, we're done here. It's always in motion. I love seeing marketing engage with implementation. You know, marketing can create some of the best new client onboarding SOPs, materials. They can also assist with building videos and how-tos. They can assist in building out a knowledge base and an FAQ for the client experience to help reduce the need for the customer success team or a tech support team, as an example, to be so hands-on and readily available. You can use automation like chatbots to be able to streamline and ticketing processes, to be able to, like HubSpot has a Kanban board, to move tickets through the process. And it's when you're looking at the client experience, and specifically with the flywheel, nothing ever has a starting or end point. So the last part of it would be what we call the CSQL, or customer success qualified lead, because you know SQLs and MQLs, we've all heard that at this point. But what about the leads that are coming from customers? What are you doing to create customer incentive programs? Another area that marketing can assist, sales can assist. Mm-hmm. And what are, we build a lot of STAR programs that we, or STAR or SOAR, depending on the kind of company that it is, with service opportunities for accelerating revenue, where we're having, and if it's a tech, sales, service technicians, optimizing revenue. So we have ways that we're accelerating revenue, but we have ways that we can build these programs for those that are working post sales to be in conversation and always growing and augmenting revenue. So the flywheel never ends, but generating new leads from the customer base is where a lot of money is left on the table with companies. They don't have anything formal. In fact, they've adopted one of the worst practices, which is, hey, do you know anyone else that would benefit from using our service? So that the salesperson's asking, which is like, do not ask that question. Or they just have like this link in their email signature. We love your referrals. It's like, no one's going to click that. Like even my dentist has that on there. It's just so overdone. So what are you doing to create real incentive programs and training people up? And really at the end of the day, if you just do a remarkable job, word of mouth is going to happen. But how do you capture that word of mouth? And where are you monitoring reviews and social media and doing social listening and engaging and opening up conversations and user groups and you name it? So there's just so much that happens in the world of customer success that seems to be very untapped for a lot of companies. And it's low hanging fruit, especially for that company looking to scale revenue.
Yeah, absolutely. That makes sense. Yeah, that's a wonderful kind of complete picture we've walked from. You're at this second stage of growth. You're trying to figure out how to do that, how to capture the data, how to build the team, how to revisit your customer profile to make sure that you are even on the right track, because you can't just continue forward with the same customer, same tactics, same everything that you've been doing up until that point. That's incredible. If there's a CEO that's listening right now, they are hitting this, what they see as their second stage of growth. What do you think is the very first step, like action that they can go out and do right now?
Audit the current environment. There's nothing better than data. I say opinions are valuable, but data is priceless. So take it upon yourself, CEO who is listening, to audit people, data, and processes. And what I would encourage you to do is to create a current state and then desired future state and identify the gap in between and just go through by each revenue department, starting with your brand, and audit, evaluate, and really understand where you are today, where you want to be, and start to identify the gap. From there, you're able to produce that action plan and get serious about implementing change.
Amazing. Well, if people want to learn more from you, Mary, if they want to get in touch with you, where can they do that?
You can learn more at houseofrevenue.com. Find me on LinkedIn. My last name is Grothe, Grothe. And you can also connect on Instagram and Twitter.
Nice. Amazing. Well, we'll point people in that direction. Thank you so much for joining us to talk us through how to scale revenue holistically as a CEO. It was really a pleasure having you.
Thank you.
And thank you to all of you guys for listening to another episode of the Predictable Revenue Podcast. Please, if you haven't already, hit that subscribe button on YouTube so that you can be notified each week as we have wonderful guests on the show like Mary Grothe this week. Thank you all, and we'll catch you next time.